thank you for downloading or streaming today's episode of the PW Torch Livecast. In just a couple minutes, we'll get you to the show. But first, I want to let you know about our big $1 VIP sale. If you have not become a PW Torch VIP member, this is the best time of year to do it. We are running our $1 sale in association with it being SummerSlam month. We are creating a SummerSlam special section on the PW Torch VIP website that will feature links to our SummerSlam reports dating back to when the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter started in the late 1980s through this year's. We're also creating a collection of our post-SummerSlam pay-per-view roundtables dating back to the mid-2000s. The last dozen SummerSlams have been covered with post-pay-per-view roundtables since we launched the PW Torch VIP website in the mid-2000s, and you can subscribe to that feed on your smartphone and listen to what we had to say the night of SummerSlam for the last dozen years. And you can subscribe to it exclusively as a VIP member on your smartphone or in iTunes. Just like all VIP audio, you can subscribe on your iPhone, Android, or through iTunes, or stream it directly from our ad-free VIP website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. You also get everything else that comes with the VIP membership: ad-free access to our website, exclusive articles, the new weekly Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter chronicling wrestling history in depth, the biggest stories, the biggest events, obscure house show results, TV reports, exclusive columns, cover stories, and so much more. 1,500 plus back issues dating back to the late 1980s. Also, in the month of July, we posted over 130 podcasts for our VIP members. The live casts are great. They're even better when the commercials are edited out. And that's a bonus for VIP members. The commercials are edited out of the PW Torch livecasts, and they're available for your convenience on our VIP audio feed, in addition to VIP exclusive shows that only VIP members listen to. I host The Fix with Todd Martin midweek for about 2 hours, and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show on weekends for about 2 hours. The two top wrestling analysts in the business are part of PW Torch VIP every week. I also record the Wade Keller Hotline every single day. I've recorded it every single day for 8 years. No days off. You wake up, and there it is, the Wade Keller Hotline with the latest breaking news, my answers to VIP member questions, and every Monday night and Tuesday night, a detailed rundown with my analysis of both Raw and SmackDown. So much more comes with the VIP membership. Get full details at pwtorch.com/govip. And the coupon code for our sale is livecast2017. No space, lowercase, livecast2017. Enter that in the promo code box on our mobile-friendly sign-up form, and you are in for $1 for one full month. Or you can take that $9 discount and apply it to a three-month or a one-year subscription. That means that a $99 subscription for 1 year gets dropped down to $90, which equates to paying just on average $7.50 a month for the next year. If you are a fan of our work here on the PW Torch Livecast and my new show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast over at Podcast One, you will love the PW Torch VIP audio lineup. So go VIP for $1 or take $9 off a longer-term subscription. This offer expires soon. Don't miss out. pwtorch.com/govip. Enter promo code LIVECAST2017. That's LIVECAST2017. No space in there. LIVECAST2017. We'd love to have you as a member. We'd love to earn your business for the long run. Find out what people love about their PW Torch VIP membership and get more of what you love in terms of pro wrestling podcasts brought to you by the team at Pro Wrestling Torch.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, that was the final build-up to Destination X. This is the post-GFW PW Torch Livecast with Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek. Andrew, what did you think of this episode of Impact Wrestling tonight? They seem to focus more on the in-ring action. A couple of promos, but not much. And we're giving us the final build to the live episode, or the live theme episode of Destination X next week.
Yeah, overall, I thought it was a pretty good episode, actually. I don't know if it was because every episode of the past month has been so bad, but this was pretty good, I thought. Maybe the best since the first India episode, I would say.
Yeah, I'd agree. I like this. And I thought that they did a nice job keeping things in the ring. I mean, they opened the show with the Sienna promo segment, but other than that, almost everything was either in the ring or video packages. I felt like, you know, this was a good go-home show to what is essentially a pay-per-view for them. I mean, it's not. It's on free TV, but this is being, this show was built to, like you would build to a pay-per-view, and I think that if you were looking at Destination X as a pay-per-view show, and you can't, because it wouldn't have been a good pay-per-view show. It's a good live episode of Impact, but I thought this was a pretty good go-home show, setting up all those matches for next week.
I agree, too. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple questionable booking decisions I thought they made tonight. But overall, yeah, I mean, they put in a pretty strong effort. Certainly much stronger. I mean, last week we were just, the episode was brutal. So this was a very nice rebound for them, I thought.
All right, you can give us a call if you want to talk about this week's episode of Impact Wrestling here in the PW Torch Livecast. Give us a call at 515-605-9345. Again, the number is 515-605-9345. Just make sure you hit the number one on your phone after you're on hold, and that will put you in the caller queue. Looks like we have a couple of people that have called in. No one in the caller queue yet, though. So if you do want to get on the air, make sure you hit the number one, and that will put you in the queue to get on the air. Andrew, what were your thoughts on the main event itself? The six-man tag, Low-Key, Trevor Lee, and Bobby Lashley beat Alberto El Patron, Matt Sydal, and Sanjay Dutt in a six-man. I mean, this was, I sometimes think this is a little lazy from a booking standpoint, where you just take, hey, here are the top three singles matches for our big show. Let's just throw them in a six-man. It's something that WWE tends to do, whether it's tag team matches or six-man matches. Maybe not so much recently, but they were definitely definitely did that for a while. But I didn't mind it here. For whatever reason, you know, I usually don't like things like this, but I thought it fit here, and I thought the action was good. I thought the main event itself was pretty good. And you know what? For the most part, they kept El Patron out of it, too. That obviously, I don't know if it was by design or not. The issues with El Patron didn't happen until after this match was taped, but I didn't feel like that he was the center of attention. It definitely felt like the Sanjay Dutt, Trevor Lee match, and even Lashley and Matt Sydal were more the center of attention than El Patron. And that could be because El Patron doesn't have El Patron doesn't have a title match next week or a singles match. But it could be because those were the two matches they were building towards. But I almost sort of like that El Patron was in the background here, not really the featured member of that match after he's been the featured member of the show for the last several weeks.
Yeah, I actually I didn't mind it either. We were both critical of that before Slammiversary. They gave away one of their big, you know, they had Lashley in there against El Patron, and they just kind of overdid it at that point. But there had been so little build towards Low-Key and El Patron at this point that I don't think it hurts it to give a little sample of that match. I think my only problem with the match itself was that they didn't do enough with Low-Key and El Patron and really make it seem like Low-Key had his number, or that there was just something more personal with them, because that didn't play into the finish at all, because Low-Key took out Sanjay Dutt. But overall, it was fast. It was a pretty good match. And yeah, I think it ended the night pretty well.
Yeah, I was just overall a big fan of them keeping the focus mostly on the in-ring stuff. The other thing that they teased throughout this show that's going to be part of Destination X next week was this Bruce Pritchard announcement. And there's really no hint or indication of what this might be, other than the announcers saying that they've been told it's going to, I think the word they used was shake the core of GFW, or shake GFW to its core. Yeah. Any thoughts on what this could be? Because I mean, they haven't really dropped any hints. I really have no idea what this announcement could be.
Maybe he's going to search for a new bodyguard because Tyrus just left him tonight for no reason.
That's true. Yeah.
I can't think of anything either. I can't think of any wrestlers who are going to come in. Nothing is coming to mind. I'm going to guess they're just bringing back some other concept like Ultimate X Cup or I'm sorry, the turn. I don't know. I'm just picturing some sort of tournament or something, but unless he's making a play for ownership because they've been kind of teasing something's been going on there.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm going to go with that. They love their giant faction wars. So I'm going to say this is the beginning of some sort of Bruce Pritchard breaking off and going to war with the Jarretts.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think it's probably something along those lines only because the genesis of this announcement was him arguing with Karen Jarrett last week. They showed a clip of them arguing backstage. So... I just hope it ties in with everything that they've had going on with Pritchard lately. I mean, a lot of this stuff hasn't made a whole lot of sense. You remember he wasn't at Slammiversary. Yeah. We've talked about that. Then he showed up at Impact the next week, and it was sort of a throwaway little segment, but Karen asked him where he was, and he said, you know, why don't you ask your husband? He knew where I was. And that nothing was really followed up on after that. Then they had them arguing last week, and now there's going to be an announcement made. So there's clearly something that's been brewing here, but... they just haven't dropped a whole lot of hints of what it might be. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I mean, look, a surprise, you know, surprises are good. I just hope that whatever the announcement is, it's big enough to live up to the hype that they're giving it because they've been playing this out now for over a month. Slammiversary was over a month ago. So this sort of started by the time this thing airs, this is going to be going on for 5 or 6 weeks. I just hope it's not something small that everybody groans at. I mean, that's the biggest worry I have when wrestling companies and shows bring up or start to hype big announcements. They very rarely feel like they follow through and deliver you something that's worthy of that hype. So I hope it's not a letdown.
Yeah, and TNA has had a bunch of those throughout their history. I mean, Dixie Carter was kind of famous for that. For always saying how something was going to change the face of the company forever. And a couple of times it was
like
big
nine
moves, and other times. yeah. And maybe four of those lived up to some of that hype. I think Kurt Angle got one, moved to Spike or something. I hope it plays out too, because like you said, I mean, they've been teasing Pritchard, of course, as like a heel. He's been favoring, EC3, Trevor Lee, so I'm guessing it's something along those lines where he's going to form a stable. But they definitely don't want to lose any goodwill right now. And I think more people are going to be interested in this show, just to it being kind of live and the build and the announcement. So definitely not a time for them to drop the ball on something like that.
My only fear with them making this a group, and I agree with you, I think if I were to have to make a pick, that's where I think they're going with it too. But they've got the big group on the show already. Like you already have LAX.
Yeah.
I don't want them to end up like WWF in 98 or WCW in the mid to late 90s, where you had the NWO as a group and then all of a sudden the entire company was just warring groups. You know, everybody had a group. WWE, you had your DX, and then you had the Hart Foundation, and then you had Los Barriques. I mean, everybody, DOA, Los Barriques, everybody, the Nation, everybody was in a group. I don't think that they need to go that far. I think one's enough, especially when you have a group as strong as LAX, who hasn't been booked all that strong in recent weeks, but they were booked stronger here tonight. Let the one group you have be a strong group, and then I think that's it, especially if it's a heel group. LAX is a heel group. You don't need another heel group, in my opinion. So I guess we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, it would be interesting as well, because they really played up tonight and last week how LAX is the most dangerous stable that's ever existed in that company, which isn't even close. I mean, by how they booked, but I mean, it's nice that they're saying it. It would be a weird time to then introduce another stable who would be booked above them, because if Pritchard's involved, I'm sure it's going to be more of a focal point in the near future.
I thought they did make LAX look a little more stronger on this show repairing them a little bit. I think it was 2 weeks ago where we, you know, were talking about how El Patron just took out the whole group by himself, essentially, at the end of the show. And then last week, LAX was, there were members of LAX that were selling for a 60-year-old Dos Caras in the main event. I thought they did a better job of building them back up, making them look stronger here. They get what I thought was a pretty good win over the Veterans of War, not in the sense that the Veterans of War are, you know, a top-tier tag team, but they looked dominant in that match, and then Loki looked good in the main event. So I thought they did a decent job of repairing them a little bit on the show after a couple of weeks where they were had others getting the upper hand on them.
I thought they made Loki look good, but I'm still critical of how the Veterans of War match went down, just because it was once again 5-on-2, and they even had a Crimson handcuffed. It's one of those we'll probably talk about it later as well, but it was one of those instances that threw me out, because why didn't they all just run in at the same time? Why are they still kind of playing by the rule 2 versus 2, and then when the other three need to help, they'd come in? I guess I thought that was not so much a step forward for them in that aspect. By the end of the night, they still looked strong. So mixed bag for me.
Yeah, I almost looked at it as that's their gimmick to a certain extent. Like they're the gang warfare mm-hmm. type, and it's not going to be even numbers anytime you're up against them. So I guess I didn't mind it. I think it's also interesting that they keep getting booked in no disqualification matches, because I think this happened a couple of weeks ago too, where they were able to interfere, and I can't recall if it was a one-on-one match or if it was a tag team match with El Patron, but there was another match where there was a no DQ stipulation and they were just all interfering the entire match. So it's a little interesting that they keep getting put in those situations where they're allowed to do that. You would think, I mean, there's we've ripped on the 4 or 5 authority figures, whoever they have running the company yep. for a while. You would think one of them would realize, hey, you know what? At least one of the babyface authority figures might figure out, hey, maybe we shouldn't put the group in no disqualification matches when all they do is interfere in each other's matches.
Yeah, Jeff Jarrett needs to stop hanging out at dojos and do his job.
Yeah, what did you think of that video? That was interesting, too. They followed up. If you listen to last week's show, we ripped the video package last week that they aired with American Top Team with Charles Rosa, a UFC featherweight, I think, dropped the line, "Wrestling is what it is, but we are real fighting." He said that on a pro wrestling episode. They follow that up with a video package tonight where Jeff Jarrett was at American Top Team. They again are playing up what I believe is a real-life storyline where members of American Top Team, in particular the coaches there, want Bobby Lashley to step back from wrestling and focus solely on MMA. They're making it a storyline, which I'm okay with. I thought this video package was – I'm not going to say it was great, Andrew, but I think it was better than it was certainly better than the one they aired last week.
Oh, easily. The only way it could have been worse is if Jeff Jarrett started shooting too and saying how wrestling's fake. Probably want to nitpick. I don't know if this is nitpicking or not, but I would save Jeff Jarrett's appearances for when they are important. He showed up at Slammiversary. I think he was in a video for when they went to India. Otherwise, this is, I think, only the second or third time he's talked on camera. And it's to talk about whether Bobby Lashley is going to join MMA or not. It just doesn't seem like something he needs to be there for. I would rather just see him for the major announcements. And you know, like next week, he should be there to make that big announcement. The video itself was fine. But I would save Double J for when it counts, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad idea either. Because, like you said, he hasn't made many appearances at all. So why not save them for the big events? It might make those big events feel big, like they're supposed to. All right, well, let's go to our first break. When we come back, we're going to get to some phone calls at 515-605-9345. Again, just make sure you hit the number 1 if you're on hold. That tells us that you want to get on the air. There's a couple of phone numbers that have called in that I recognize, but none of them show up as being in the caller queue to want to get on the air. So if you are waiting to get on the air, just please hit the number 1, and that will put you in the caller queue. We're going to get to some phone calls right after the break, and we'll talk more about this week's episode of GFW Impact. You are listening to the PW Torch Livecast post-Impact show.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
All right, we're going to get to the phone calls here on the post-impact edition of the PW Torch Livecast. The number to give us a call is 515-605-9345. I don't have my list of phone numbers with me. I'm actually on the road this week, so I am coming to you from Hartford, Connecticut, Andrew. Beautiful Hartford, Connecticut.
Whoa. Oh, very nice.
Yes, I drove by the WWE headquarters earlier today, coming up the highway. So I saw the big glass building.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw the big glass building from the highway. All right, let's get to the phone calls. And again, I don't have the list of phone numbers with me like I usually do because I am traveling, but I believe that this is Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, is this you?
Yes, it is. Mike, how are you and Andrew doing this week?
Not too bad.
Pretty good, and I'm impressed with myself for recognizing your number.
I'm proud of you, Mike. Good job.
Thank you. What's on your mind tonight?
Ah, let's see here. Much better show than last week, guys. I have to agree with you. As far as Bruce Pritchard's announcement goes, which this was going to be my first question, but since you just covered it, I had to come up with a replacement. But as far as Bruce Pritchard's announcement goes, I think as I believe you just claimed, or as I believe you just said, he's going to claim that when he was brought in to Global Force to be the executive consultant, which I believe is his shoe title, that came with some sort of ownership clause in his deal, so that makes him part, or perhaps in his heelish delusional mind, full owner of Global Force Wrestling. So this is what I think is going to happen. After he says that, Karen is going to come out and say she doesn't remember Jeff discussing such contract with her because she's the co-founder of the company. And then for the next 2.5 months, they're going to be arguing back and forth. And then on November the 5th at Mound for Glory, there's going to be a big match where Bruce chooses a heel wrestler and Karen and Jeff choose a babyface wrestler, and whoever is charged wins. They are full owner of Global Force, and the losing individual must leave permanently.
I could see something like that happening for sure. They love storylines like that.
And as you know, I've been virtually spot on when it comes to predictions up to this point.
You have been. You have been, I think, working at about 100% rate so far.
So now on to my question here. This first one concerns the global force unified knockout title. At least I think they're still referring to it as the knockout title.
I think they are.
If Gail Kim does not win the knockout title next week, does that guarantee that she will win the title on November 5th at Bound for Glory?
Have they? I know she said she was going to retire. Was that at the end of the year, Andrew, that they said that? Or was it after Bound for Glory?
I think she said end of the year, I believe.
You're correct, but at the end of the year.
Yeah, so you know what, Colin, I think in that case, I think she loses next week, but it sets up an opportunity for her to have a rematch at Bound for Glory. And then, you know what, like, I'm not a big fan of them or of any company having someone retire with a championship, but I think in Gail Kim's case, you can make an exception. I think I'd have her win the belt at Bound for Glory, give her that one last big moment, because she is going to stay with the company. It's not like she's going to WWE. I mean, she's staying with the company in a producer role. So I think having her win at Bound for Glory and then even retiring with the belt to set up a tournament of some kind for after the first of the year is fine. I'm actually, you know, with the way the Super X Cup has gone, I'm okay with GFW running more tournaments. I'm confident that they can actually do it and do it in a way that is good television. So I wouldn't be opposed to something like that. Andrew, what are your thoughts on where do they go next week and where Gail Kim might go the rest of the year here?
Yeah, I think she'll go into chase mode for a couple more months until Bound for Glory, or maybe they'll do one more live type special at the end of the year. I don't know what that would be, but yeah, I see her. I could see it either way, like her losing in her last match and just coming up short and really putting some heat on Sienna or whoever it is. Like you said, I mean, usually I would be against that, but in her case, I think I said this last week, but nobody's even been like half as important to that division as Gail Kim. Like, I don't know who number two would be, you know, in that sense. Otherwise, I mean, the knockouts division just isn't firing on all cylinders right now. I mean, there's Rosemary, there's Sienna, and then there's Laurel Van Ness, just kind of, you know, being a joke character at the moment. So it's not like someone's going to really suffer from this at the moment. So I would be all for it to have like an actual feel good moment with her going out on top.
My second question is in regards to the Global Force tag team title. Since the tag team of the Laredo Kid and Garza Jr., who we presumed would have been LAX's next program about a month and a half to 2 months ago, lost to El Hijo del Fantasma and Mara Fuji, who will be LAX's next challenger for the Global Force tag titles, and who will LAX eventually lose to now, since Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid have presumably been knocked down a couple bids.
I'm a little lost there, Andrew. Where do you think the tag division goes? I think there's really nobody that I can think of that's really set up well to be their next challengers.
I was just running through everyone in my head as well. I mean, was it OBE is coming next week, but they're heels. Reno Scum, I don't know when they're coming back, but they were kind of heelish as well. Yeah, I don't know. I would guess that it'll just be somebody from AAA and perhaps another team, or just some other company that they have a relationship with that they could bring in a team for a bit. Because, yeah, they need to really build up the other teams, I think, in order for it to feel credible, really, in any way right now.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I think they might try to plug the hole here a little bit with some of their talent exchanges, because yeah, I'm looking here. There's really not any teams that have been built up to be in that position. So, and this is where, you know, this is where their taping schedule probably helps them a little bit, because they can take a team from AAA or Pro Wrestling NOAH, and they can take them in for 3 or 4 days and get 5 or 6 weeks worth of television out of it. So this is where there are some advantages to taping the number of episodes that they tape in a row. But yeah, Kylan, to answer your question, I'm really not sure where they go, because there's really not a team on here on their roster right now, at least on their regular roster, that seems to be in position. I think, Andrew, you're right. Probably Reno Scum could be put there pretty quickly if, I think it was, don't remember which one of them needed surgery. If it was
Adam.
Okay, yeah, and I believe I remember hearing that that was like a 6 to 8 month recovery, and that probably happened when did that happen, maybe February or March. So I mean, even then they're probably looking, well, I mean, on the early end, if it was early in the spring, they could be looking at some point in September when he's back healthy, but it would be after this next set of television tapings, and these tapings are going to take them all the way to Bound for Glory. I think the tapings next week, I think, go all the way through to Bound for Glory. I think they were supposed to do a set in September, but they canceled those and added more dates onto this August taping. So where they go from between now and November 5th, I think it's really hard to tell.
I think it's time to reform the bromance.
Well, Jesse Goddard is supposed to be coming back soon.
Yep, there we go. Problem solved.
And my final question concerns Global Force's overall booking vision. Can we consider tonight, since this was a more stripped-down, no-nonsense kind of a show, and since it was rather decent, can we consider tonight the official start of Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel's vision, since we are allegedly going into the official rebranding into Global Force Wrestling next week? And should we look at the last 9 or 8.5 months as Jeff and Dutch phasing out the Dave Lagana, Matt Conway, Billy Corgan vision, where they would consider themselves as not being allowed to do the things they really wanted to do because they had to become busy phasing out the old vision before being able to execute theirs?
Well, I think there's something to be said for that. I do think they needed to phase out what was happening before they could really go into 100% what they wanted to do, unless you were going to do what I think Eric Bischoff was going to do when if Fusion Media bought WCW back in the day. I believe he said in interviews that his plan was to literally shut the company down for a couple of weeks and then restart it as if it were brand new. They weren't going to do that, obviously. So they did, I think, need to phase some things out. You saw them phase out Decay. You saw them kind of phase out the Hardys, although they sort of just left abruptly when their contracts were up. As well as fading out some other ideas. So if this is their vision, we can debate whether or not the characters they're going with are the right ones. But if this is their vision in terms of the structure of the show, with most of the show being action in the ring, and then replacing long in-ring promo segments with video packages and interviews that are short and sound bites and stuff like that, then I think they're on the right track. I mean, I like the format of this show. I thought this show flowed better, and sometimes I think people tell me that I compare things to MMA too much, but you look at the presentation of a UFC show, and it's not, I mean, no one's coming to the cage and grabbing a microphone and talking for 15 minutes. You know, they say what they need to say in sound bites and interviews, and they still tell you a pretty good backstory before the fighters get into the cage. I think this show tonight from GFW reminded me a lot of that. There were video packages that were hyping the matches next week, but they were also hyping the matches on this show, and they told you what the backstory was. And it didn't take long. You know, it took 30 seconds, 45 seconds. So if that's their vision, if this format is their vision, then I'm really looking forward to it. Andrew, do you sort of agree? Do they have to phase out the old stuff before they really could get into exactly what they want to be doing?
I'm going to be more cynical here, and just I don't think they have a vision. I think, I don't know if Jeff Jarrett has ever really had a strong one. I mean, going back to TNA's early days, you know, like the X division was never defined, and it was just one former WWE, WCW guy coming in after the next and being pushed to the top, and then him going over them. And even in the later years, it was still about the former WWE guys. Otherwise, has made, I would lean more towards just like a giant stable warfare would be his master plan. What we've seen the past few months has, I just haven't seen any vision at all. People come in, they disappear. It just really seems like El Patron and Lashley are the only two they really have something concrete in mind for on a week-to-week basis. So I would love to be more optimistic about it and think this is the direction they're heading in. But I think it's just going to be more of the same. Like, one week it'll be good, one week it'll be very frustrating, and it'll just keep going that way until they actually bring in a different creative team.
That has sort of been the format or the track record they've had for the last couple of weeks, because they've had shows, or the last couple of months, because they've had shows on weeks like this where I've come out of it and it felt really good with the way they presented the product, and then the next week you're back to, you know, 45 minutes without a match with two long in-ring promos in a row. So I'm hoping that they stick with what they've done tonight. I don't know, you know, from a booking standpoint, there are things that can definitely be better. I think other guys can get pushed that aren't getting pushed now and et cetera. But I was at least encouraged by the format of this show. I just hope they stick with it. And they need to prove that. They need to prove consistency, because, Andrew, like you said, they haven't been very consistent these first 8 months.
I'd agree, guys. Well, that's it for me. We'll talk next week.
All right, sounds good, Kyle.
Awesome.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome, Mike.
All right, you can give us a call, too, at 515-605-9345. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the GFW live events that GFW were back on the road this past weekend in the New York area, and then we'll get to running down this week's episode of Impact, and we also have our top three to get to. This week, it's the top three most underutilized wrestlers on the roster that isn't named Trevor Lee. We both agree that Trevor Lee is probably the most underutilized guy on the roster. So we've come up with three more that aren't named Trevor Lee, and we'll get to that top three later too. So we'll talk some live events, we'll talk this week's episode, we'll get to our top three all in a little bit. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it, it takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Back here in the PW Torch Livecast, I am Mike McMahon. He is Andrew Socek. This is the post-impact edition of the Livecast. Andrew, GFW was back on the road last week. I don't know if you read the reports from the live shows. They did one in Long Island and one in, I think, Staten Island. But both in the New York area. From what I understand from looking at pictures and from reading some reports, the Friday show was in a smaller venue, and that drew about 400 people. And then the Saturday show was in a ballpark in Staten Island. I had a couple of people that followed me on Twitter who were sending me some photos and their impressions of the show as it went on. And then I think it was PW Insider that reported they drew about 1,100 to the ballpark show on Saturday. But anything that you took away from their return to live events, either from the way the shows came across or the actual, you know, what they drew in terms of people, and any takeaways, I guess, from them heading back out on the road?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that seems like scary bad, drawing like 400 people. I mean, I just don't even see how that's possible. If you have a TV show, you know, you have people out there that people have seen from TNA or WWE from the past. I've been to local shows where I live or in the Twin Cities, and, you know, they'll draw like 200, usually 200 to 300. And just to imagine, and there's nobody on that show sometimes that you've ever heard of. It's just a local wrestler. So to have 20 guys and to fly them in and to put them in the motel rooms and you only draw like 100 more, I don't know. That just seems awful to me. Well, you know, the 1,000 is definitely better. But it certainly can't be encouraging, I would think. What do you kind of think about it?
The numbers struck me as well. From what I understand, and I was talking to some people that went to the Friday show, it was, and I had some pictures of it too, it was in a real small venue. I'm not sure the venue itself held more than maybe 500 or 600 people. It was in a small, it looked like an indie show. I mean, it was in a really small building. And then somebody that I was talking with on Twitter said that the market wasn't really there either, that they may have done it, they may have had a better job, had a better time drawing people if they were more in the Jersey area. Did it when we one show in New Jersey and one show in New York City rather than one show on Long Island where they were sort of far out from the city? It wasn't as densely populated. So there was the person that I'd spoke to said that they thought it was a weird choice in terms of location for that Friday show. And it seems like they suffered from an attendance standpoint, although from the person that I was speaking to, he doesn't think they could have fit more than a couple hundred people in there anyway, because it was really, it's a small building. It's like it almost looked like a town ice rink that they had just converted into a wrestling arena for the night. So pretty tiny. The stadium show, I think, was obviously better. You get over 1,000 people. There's not many wrestling products now today that are going to draw 1,000 people. I don't care where you are. So That was obviously better. You know, I also think from a business standpoint, I'm sure that ballpark show was a sold show. So I mean, they were making their money on it anyway. That's what GFW was doing for a while. They were running sold shows to stadiums. They didn't really care about tickets. I mean, they care about ticket sales, but it's more on, at that point, it's on the Staten Island Yankees to sell the tickets. It's not on GFW to sell the tickets. GFW is getting paid to show up and do the show. So I thought the Saturday show was more encouraging than the Friday show for sure, though, because even though it's not, I mean, it wasn't 5,000 people, but how many groups can run a show and bring in more than 1,000 people? I mean, there's probably only a handful of them right now that could do that. So considering they haven't run live events in a while, I thought the Saturday show gave you a little more reason for optimism, but I don't think that the reaction from this weekend was so good that they need to be running out and doing more of these. It sounded like from the conference call a few weeks ago, Jeff Jarrett was saying that they're going to start slow and maybe do, you know, one live event loop per quarter or something. I think that's a good place to start right now. There was nothing about this past weekend that jumps out and says, oh wow, you know what, yeah, they got to be running house shows every week.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like to me too, just reading through various reports. Yeah, I mean, like you said, 1,000 isn't that bad. I mean, Ring of Honor could do that. I can't, maybe somebody else could do that. I'm not thinking of off the top of my head, but yeah, I mean, the most TNA ever did, I think they did 5,000 once, otherwise they did into the thousands a few times. So they certainly weren't going to touch that at this point. You know, just viewership wise, they're in the 300,000s where before they were over a million, when they were doing, you know, 3,000 to 5,000. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for them. Cause I think just, the name change probably is confusing people at this moment. And just the fact that I think they lost a lot of goodwill with fans over the past few, you know, 4 or 5 years, especially. So it's, they're going to have to put on a lot of good TV over the next probably couple of years to really get people to trust the brand again and be able to get invested in it. The name change was a good thing in the long term, but yeah, I think, they definitely have a lot of work ahead of them.
They absolutely do. I mean, I've been to some events around the Boston area where I'm from, and I can think of, you know, lockdown in 2008 was in Lowell, Massachusetts, and that they drew probably 5,000 or 6,000 people. I mean, it was a pay-per-view, but they drew 5,000 or 6,000 people. They did Slammiversary, I think, in 2013 from McGinnis Arena at Boston University. And again, it was probably 5,500 people at that show. They're not coming anywhere close to that now. I mean, if you would, even as a pay-per-view, you were to put Bound for Glory in one of those two buildings, and you're probably going to get 1,500 people or 2,000 people at most. So they'd have a lot of repairing to do. And I think, you know, we've talked about this in the past. They need to be smart about where they go and go to the markets that make sense. Like this past weekend, Long Island and Staten Island, it's like an hour and a half apart, but that Long Island show was so far deep onto Long Island. I think somebody mentioned to me that it was almost near the Hamptons, which is like really ritzy ditzy. I don't see anybody, you know, really scurrying to get to a local hockey rink for a wrestling show on that part of Long Island. So maybe New Jersey would have been better. Maybe it would have been better to go to a place like Philadelphia. I mean, Philadelphia and New York City are only 2 hours apart. So I think they just need to be smart about where they run. I know Jarrett said that they were looking at a loop, I believe, through the Toronto area at some point too, which makes sense because that's where Anthem, you know, that's where Anthem is based, and maybe that'll work. I mean, look at the Toronto crowd for Raw and SmackDown this week was pretty hot. So I think they just got to be smart and go to markets where there's a lot of wrestling fans. Look at the markets where WWE typically draws big crowds and sells out and has a vocal, you know, a vocal base of fans. I think those are the markets you look at: Chicago, Philadelphia, Boston, New York, Toronto. Look for places that make sense as you start to dip your foot back into live events.
I agree. Yeah, I think Canada would be a great call. Go to places that don't get a lot of shows. I don't know. I see them just getting eaten alive in Chicago. But maybe people aren't going to buy tickets to just crap on the show for 2 hours. I don't know. I would love to go to that show and see the reaction to some people. But yeah, like you said, they just need to hit up places that they know they can sell to. Because that's incredibly important for them right now, and especially to turn this image around and to get good photos online that don't look embarrassing.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of been the story over the past few years is, hey, look at how bad this attendance was. So, yeah, definitely need to turn that around.
The UK would work, too. I think that was another thing that Jarrett said, that they were talking about going back to the UK for some TV events. And, I mean, those I think we've talked about it. Those UK impacts that they were doing at the beginning of the year, they usually went in January, I think. They haven't gone the last couple of years, but there was a run there of 3 or 4 years in a row where every January they were going to the UK to tape Impact, and it was the hottest crowds of the year, and they were drawing 4,000 or 5,000 people for an Impact. Mm-hmm. I mean, those were big shows, and they felt so much different than what the show feels like now.
Yeah, and especially since they are now back on, is it Spike over there?
They're on Spike in the UK.
Okay, yeah, and I think they were doing like pretty solid ratings over there. I don't know what they're at the moment, but it seemed like it was more popular there than it was here, really.
Yeah, it very well could be. And that's also a place where, like you said, go to places that don't get a lot of live events. Well, you know what? I mean, WWE goes there, what, twice a year?
Yeah.
That's a market that might be a little untapped.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
All right, let's go to another break. When we come back, we'll run down what we haven't talked about yet about this week's episode of Impact. Then we'll get to our top three. This is the PW Torch Livecast.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, let's get to running down what else happened on this week's episode of Impact, and then in a little bit we'll get to our top three. They started the show with Sienna running a sit-in protest. She wanted to know who she was going to be facing for the Knockouts title next week. We talked about it with Kylan a little while ago. She's going to face Gail Kim. The storyline here was that Karen Jarrett had an opponent picked for her but wouldn't tell her who it was. Then Karen came out and told her that she was going to face Gail Kim. What was your reaction to the opening segment? Because mine was a little confusion. Karen Jarrett is supposed to be a babyface, I think. But, you know, she's kind of coming across as a heel. She's not telling Sienna who she's facing. Her whole demeanor felt like she was a heel. I know she was doing heelish things to a heel, and maybe that double negative makes her a babyface, but I didn't think she came across very good here.
Yeah, I was really dreading this segment. Just reading that Karen Jarrett and Sienna were going to open up the night. Sienna's fine, but yeah, Karen can be not a great TV character. She comes across as really condescending. She got physically involved with Sienna and tossed her to the ground. So I thought it was just going to be more of that, like kind of how Stephanie McMahon would talk down to the women in WWE. Luckily, it was rather short. It's good to see Gail Kim back, though. I also wish they had more than a week to promote this match, because it's, you know, that's pretty big. I mean, Gail's been gone a long time, so ideally it would be another month or so, but maybe they have something in mind to keep this story going forward.
That's what I thought, too. That was my first reaction, was that they must have something that's going to keep this going on from just being a one-off. Then they went right to Laredo Kid and Garza Jr. against El Fantasma and Marufuji. Marufuji and El Fantasma get the win in about 10 minutes. What were your thoughts on what ended up being the opening match?
The match was good. I complain every week now. It seems that they kind of throw a random tag match out there. So lately it's been a six-man, where it's a match that feels like it's not that important. And that's what it kind of felt like here. I just wish the announcers would talk up more, like, oh, if they win, they're in line for a title shot, or they'll get that much closer. Just do something. Otherwise, it's just good wrestling, but not a lot behind it. I'm also, Garza Jr. is kind of, he's just so goofy because he keeps, you know, ripping off his pants and then it backfires on him. And yet he's a baby face and we're like supposed to cheer him, I guess. That just cracks me up because the past few times the heels take advantage of it and it's completely his fault for ripping off his pants, you know, to show off.
I said that too. You know what? I was happy that they did what they did here tonight, where Garza Jr. went for that pant spot and then immediately got super kicked by both Marufuji and El Fantasma. I was like, good. You know, that's realistically, that's exactly what would happen. He's basically trying to call a timeout in the middle of a match. I mean, I could understand, okay, mm-hmm. if that's going to be the big spot and, hey, we're going to cheer because he rips off the pants and he has tights on underneath. You do it when the opponent's down or when they're on the outside, okay. But when you're literally, like, looking at your opponent going, wait a minute, stop. I'm going to rip my pants off. Like, yeah, you should get super kicked in the face, and that's what happened. So, it is goofy. I don't really care for it, but I just don't understand how that is. That supposed to make us feel sympathy for the baby face, or I think it just comes across as, well, you're an idiot. Like, yeah, you deserve to get kicked in the
face. Right. Either keep your pants on or just take them off before the match.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it creates any sympathy at all. I mean, I think most people are looking at him going, you're just an idiot.
Absolutely, yes.
Then they went to a handicap match. Congo Kong beat Joseph Park and Grado in about 2 minutes. There was more stuff that happened, though, after this match. Kong was about to hit a splash on Grado and Joseph Park together. He had piled them on top of each other. Laurel Van Ness came out and stopped him. Then it looked like Kongo Kong was going to body slam Laurel Van Ness, but Tyrus's music played. He walked down to the ring, went face-to-face with Kongo Kong, and then Laurel Van Ness pulled Kongo Kong away. I have legitimately no idea what was going on here. Tyrus was Bruce Pritchard's bodyguard. Apparently he's not anymore. Although the only thing I can think of is that they were saying even tonight that Tyrus is the fixer, and they ran that gimmick where a few months ago where he was with Eli Drake 1 week and then against him the next week because someone else had paid him. So I guess it makes a little bit of sense in that Tyrus just seems to work for whoever's paying him. But if that's the case, I don't know in storyline what he was doing out there to confront Kongo Kong, unless Grado and Joseph Park hired him as a bodyguard for the night, in which case he didn't do a very good job because he didn't come out till after they got beat up.
Yeah, I couldn't think of any reason. I thought it was just more kind of bad storyline writing. I mean, he's just had quite the year and a half, because they did months of those vignettes of the fixer, and then he showed up like once. He disappeared again. Yeah, like you said, showed up with Eli Drake, got rid of him, went right back to him, joined Pritchard, and now he wants Kong for some reason. I'm hoping it makes sense, but I don't think it will. I think they just wanted to have a irresistible force versus the immovable object type match and just put those two against each other. That's kind of my guess there.
You know, one of the things that I wrote in my report on pwtorch.com is I hope this doesn't lead to a match. I hope this leads to them, and this could go to them fix it, or one of the issues we talked about earlier with the tag team division, I hope they put those guys together as a team. Put them together as
I had that exact same thought.
Yeah, there's a monster tag team. I mean, they wouldn't challenge LAX because you'd have two heels there, but you've got two singles guys that should probably be doing, because even Tyrus has been a waste. I mean, he's barely wrestled, and he's not terrible. He's not a ring technician. He's not Bret Hart, but he's not terrible, and he's a pretty big guy, and he's a good-looking character. So you've got these two monsters who you're not really doing much with. Throw them in a tag team. See if you can get something out of them from a tag team standpoint, if they can inject some life into that division. I'd rather see them go there than having these guys do a heel versus heel match.
Yeah, for sure. Tyrus says just his whole run has been like stop and start pushes. He's been moved from one person to the next. But he hasn't really been in like a tag team like that. And there's nobody, I guess the closest thing going would be like the Authors of Pain for somebody, two guys near that size. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. GFW has nothing like that. So it'd be fun to have them just have like a complete killer tag team in that company. Cause I can't think of the last time they had two guys, just two enormous guys like that who could run people over.
After that match, they went to some video packages. They had a video package on Sanjay Dutt and the X Division title and his feud with Trevor Lee. They aired the video package on Jeff Jarrett when he was touring American Top Team, which we talked about earlier. And then they aired a video that they said was taped earlier in the day where Dutch Mantel was doing a sit-down with Lashley and Matt Sydal ahead of their match at Destination X next week. Lashley and Sydal ended up getting into a little scuffle after the interview was done. But I thought this was really good. I mean, it was another example. They've been really strong with these video packages. I've been a big fan of them. And this was another one that I thought was a little unique and had a different feel to it, where it wasn't just the sound bites. You had the sit-down interview. This is another example of there's different ways to do promos that aren't guys standing in the ring holding the mic and talking forever. I thought this was good and a good alternative to what otherwise I'm sure would have been a long in-ring promo segment a couple of months ago.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, seeing Dutch Mantel just kind of made me roll my eyes initially, just because all four authority figures were on tonight. But I've been harsh on Sydal the past couple of weeks, but I thought he was much better in this setting. And I like the fact that Bobby Lashley just like walked up to him and just started choking him. Like, didn't pick him up for like a power slam or anything.
Yeah.
Went right for the throat, and people broke it up. So to me, that felt realistic. I like that stuff in the show. So definitely hit on that segment.
LAX and the Veterans of War had a street fight for the tag team titles. We already talked about that. Then it was the Super X Cup semifinal, ACH versus Ishimori. Ishimori got the win in 10 minutes. I thought this was the match of the night. I mean, it really should be no surprise. But yeah, I thought this was the match of the night by far. And I liked the thing they did afterwards, where Desmond Xavier came down and looked at the trophy, and Ishimori rolled out of the ring, and they shook hands briefly and set up that they're going to have the finals of this tournament next week. I was really down on this tournament when they first announced it. It was like, this is just trotting out something they haven't done in 10 years, and it's going to be a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, in my opinion, I mean, I was totally wrong. I mean, this is really, the whole tournament is delivered. I thought this match, like I said, was match of the night, and I am really looking forward to what I think could steal the show next week between Desmond Xavier and Ishimori.
Yeah, me too. I'm hoping they give him at least 15 minutes next week, maybe even more. I thought this was a good match, and I agree with you, match of the night. I wish they would have taken 5 minutes out of the Laredo Kid Garza Jr. match and given it to these guys. It just felt like it was a little bit too short for me, like I was just getting invested in it.
Totally agree.
And then it was over. Yeah. And which is disappointing, because last week, I think the other semifinal match went like 16 minutes. So I wish it would have just gone a few bit more minutes to really make it feel, kind of epic and really build towards that huge showdown next week. But overall, another good segment.
Who do you think comes out on top of the tournament?
Desmond Xavier.
Yeah, me too.
How about you?
Yeah, me too. I think Xavier, and I think he should, because Ishimori is going to go back. He's going to go back to Japan. This is an opportunity now to really build and give Desmond Xavier this star-making win and make him the centerpiece of the X Division. It'll be interesting to see who wins that X Division title match next week, because I would assume that Xavier is going to end up with a title shot at some point. During these little video packages where guys were talking about why they wanted to win the tournament, all of them said that they wanted it to get a shot at the X Division title. So I don't know. I mean, to be quite honest with you, I almost wouldn't want to see him face Sanjay Dutt or Trevor Lee. The better matches are Ishimori and ACH and Drago. You know, I think those are all going to be better matches, only because I don't think they know what they're doing with Trevor Lee. If I were to take a pick, I'd like to see Trevor Lee win the X Division title, and then Xavier maybe chase Trevor Lee for a while here.
Yeah, I would like them to hold off on that as well. I don't know if they will have that kind of patience, but I would like to see that. And I would like to see this tournament come back next year. And I would expand it, maybe do like 16 competitors, really play it up. Bring back people that lost and, you know, say they want to win this year, and just really play it up and extend it, because I think it's been a good use of TV time this past month and a half or so.
And I like the fact, too, that they're bringing in guys that aren't necessarily under contract. You know, they're not just sticking with their X Division. As far as I know, ACH is not under a GFW contract. I hope that he's a guy that they sign, because I'm a fan of his. But don't be afraid. And I would say this even in the heavyweight division. Don't be afraid. If something makes sense, bring a guy in. Because let that taping schedule they have work for them. Because WWE can't do that. They can't bring in a guy for 4 days and get 2 months worth of TV out of him. They can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's physically impossible. So use that to your advantage if you can. You know, if there's a guy you want to bring in, even if you don't have him under contract, you could do a 2 month storyline, or at least a month and a half storyline, with 3 days worth of tapings or 4 days worth of tapings. You don't need to have guys under contract. Like, I heard Wade talk about this, I think back when Anthem first bought the company. One of the things he talked about on one of his Wade Keller hotline, I think it was on a Wade Keller hotline, because I think it was an Ask the Editor, where somebody was like, hey, why don't you just take 5 or 6 guys and keep those guys under permanent contracts? Everybody else is paid per appearance, and then you've got your 5 or 6 core guys that you protect, and you go out of your way to protect those 5 or 6 guys. And then everybody else, is pay per appearance, and they can come, they can go. You can bring new guys in. You're not tied down to anything. You're only paying for the guys that you use. You're not bleeding money. That might not be a bad way for them to go right now.
I could certainly see them going that way, especially with all those ties to different promotions. I mean, obviously, you can't sign everyone. So you bring in a guy, like you said, for 4 days, get 2 months out of him, move on. If he clicks, awesome. You know, sign him to a deal. If not, give him another chance in a year or so. The only thing they have to worry about these days, as opposed to the past, is that WWE is so much more open to who they will hire. So before, they didn't essentially need to lock in like a Samoa Joe or AJ Styles type because Vince wouldn't have really wanted him. So now getting those key guys and signing them to like long-term deals and investing them, I think is probably more important than ever in keeping them happy.
Yeah, the guys that they want to protect and keep for sure.
Yeah.
And then that's why I think they also would need to be really careful. The guys that you're going to bring in on paper appearance type situations, you've got to make sure that you're wrapped up with them at the end of those tapings. So if in the 6 weeks in between they sign a contract and just leave, you're not hurt. You know, if you're going to bring in ACH and he's pay-per appearance, like, don't put the X Division title on him at the end of a television taping. Maybe he has like a 4 week run in the middle of the television taping, but make sure that he's not holding the belt when your tapings are done so that you don't have one of your champions just up and leave. I mean, that's something they'd really have to be careful about. But I think they could do it. And I think that, you know, there's enough time in between tapings where they have plenty of time to plan some of that stuff out. All right. Oh, after that, they went to the main event. We already talked about the main event. So let's go to our last break. Let's go to a break. We'll come back. We'll do our top three. We'll get to our VIP plugs. And then Andrew and I will record our VIP after show for VIP members at PW Torch. So one more commercial break. When we come back, we'll do our top three. This week, it's the top three most underutilized wrestlers on the roster that aren't named Trevor Lee. And then we'll wrap up after that. So you're listening to the PW Torch live cast post-Impact show.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page or download the show or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
All right, back in the PW Torch Livecast, it's time for our top three. This week, our top three, the top three most underutilized wrestlers on the roster, not named Trevor Lee. Andrew, who did you have as number three?
Number three, I am going to go with one of the knockouts. I'm going with Rosemary. I was talking about earlier, there's not much going on in the knockouts division right now. There's Sienna, Gail Kim, and that's the only feud at the moment. Rosemary came out on the losing side of the Sienna feud, and now she seemingly has nothing going on. So I just see a lot more in her. I think the Impact Zone audience really likes her. And to me, she's completely different than anything you'll find in WWE right now, which I think is really important for who they should be building around. I've mentioned it before. I like Sienna, but I'm just not high on her. I just don't quite think she should be the centerpiece of the division. I think it should be Rosemary. I could be wrong about that, but that is who I would go with for the foreseeable future. And I definitely like to see them do more with her. Otherwise, I think Allie would be a solid call as well. But any thoughts on Rosemary?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I didn't have her in my top three, but she was one of the ones that I had definitely thought about because she was on a really quick trajectory the end of last year and the beginning of this year. And then it seems to have cooled a little bit with decay dissolving since the new regime took over. You know, it almost goes back to, and this is something that concerned me at the time. I think we've talked about it. Did they just look at Decay and even look at Rosemary's character, the Anthem regime, the Jeff Jarrett's and Dutch Mantels, and just say, the supernatural thing isn't what really we're all about. It's not really what we're going to push. Maybe not. I mean, they were fine bringing in guys like Drago, who's literally supposed to be a dragon. So, you know, maybe they're okay with it. I hope they are, because I kind of agree that they've underutilized her. My number three was somebody else who I feel like has been underutilized. And like Rosemary, though, seemed like he was on a rapid trajectory at one point, and that's Eli Drake. Eli Drake has gone from someone, the beginning of the year, I mean, we started doing the show in January, and I think the beginning of the year, we were both like, wow, you know, Eli Drake by Bound for Glory could be in the world title match. I mean, he was really on a rapid rise, and that seems to have cooled big time. I mean, he wasn't even on the show tonight. He's been involved in some high-profile stuff. I mean, he was involved in the D'Angelo Williams match at Slammiversary, so obviously they had some trust in him there. But, man, I mean, he's cooled off quickly, and it just seems like they're wasting him right now, not doing anything with him.
Yeah, I'm just baffled with what's going on with him, because he was doing the, you know, he had his own talk show, and I thought it was going pretty well. I mean, sometimes they would throw in that canned laughter, and it got to be a bit too much, but he was really growing, you know, and him and Tyrus had a great pairing. And you, how you were talking about, you know, sign 5-6 guys or, you know, or women and really build around them, invest in them. He would be one of those guys for me. I think WWE is just going to snatch him up when they get the chance. And, he is definitely somebody that should be one of their top guys for the next few years. And yeah, it's really disappointing. Yeah, he wasn't on tonight. Last week he was on for about 30 seconds. Otherwise, he is just, vastly underutilized at the moment.
Yeah, just especially where it felt like he was on such a rise there for a while. It felt like he wasn't going to be able to be stopped. And then all of a sudden he's just vanished. Who did you have as your number two?
I took another person that vanished and who has had a really, really rough year. He just got done feuding with Swoggle, and before that, he was a chauffeur for Aaron Rex. Rockstar Spud. Yeah, we've talked about him before. In a different wrestling universe, this guy is a star, I think, somewhere. He's got a unique look. He's a good talker. He's a good wrestler. He's a great underdog. He was almost a star in that feud, as much as you could in TNA, in his feud with EC3 a few years ago, and they completely dropped the ball on that. And time again, I would just figure, well, he's just too talented. They'll give him something to do. And they do give him things to do, and it's really bad and embarrassing, and it stinks. I mean, he's a guy that should be making more money. He should be more famous. And instead, he does crappy humor, and he's just cast in awful, awful roles, and just feel bad for the guy.
You know, I almost want to change mine around now because I completely forgot about Rock. I mean, that tells you how underutilized he's been. I completely forgot about him. He hasn't been on the show. I don't think he. Yeah,
since India.
Yeah, he hasn't been on the show since India. He wasn't part of Slammiversary, and he hasn't been part of any of the tapings since then.
Yeah, him and Mahabali Sarah got left over there, I guess.
Yeah, they must have left him in India.
Never to be seen again.
I went with another knockout for my number two, and that's Diamante. I'm pretty sure she's only wrestled one match, and I could be wrong. I only recall her wrestling one match, and she could do a lot more than that. I mean, here's someone where if you feel like the knockouts division has gotten a little stale, and for a while it was just Sienna and Rosemary, and that was kind of it. Gail Kim being back now should help in that regard. But Diamante is another one who I think you can throw in there, and she could be a really good heel. She's a good wrestler, and I just don't feel like they've utilized her in LAX, but I don't think they've utilized her anywhere close to her potential as far as what she could be doing for the Knockouts division.
Yes, agreed. I only remember her being in that giant battle royal, and like half of those women disappeared and were never seen again.
Yeah. They seem to be booking her strong in that, too. I think she had some eliminations in there, and she was really a standout in that battle royal, but then they haven't really used her in the ring since.
Yeah, that's a good pick, because, I hadn't even thought of that we've only seen her wrestle once. I was definitely thinking of somebody from LAX. to add to this. I think Homicide is also underutilized. Yeah, you could pick pretty much anyone, kind of how they've been booked. But yeah, no, so that's a great call. I would definitely like to see her in the ring. And the Knockouts badly need some new wrestlers. So hopefully they have, I guess Gail Kim captures the title. Maybe they could run a program with her.
Who did you have as your number one?
My number one is your number three, Eli Drake. yeah, pretty much what we said. I think he's has the potential to be a star someplace. I think he could be in the main event scene in WWE someday. I don't think he's ever going to be number one, number two guy, but I think he could definitely work himself into a program with somebody briefly or be the Miz equivalent. I think there's just a lot in this guy, and they I don't know if he's a pain behind the scenes or they just don't have anything for him, but yeah, just confusing how he has basically disappeared.
Yeah, it's been really confusing and really frustrating, I think, too, because you know that, like we were saying, you just know that he can do so much more because he's shown that he can do so much more. I went way off the board with my number one. He's a guy that is still listed on the roster, so I think he's still with the company, but he's also a guy that we have not seen since, I think it was April. That's Kingston. Eddie Kingston, who he was known in the independent scene.
Oh, wow.
From DCC.
I was like, Kofi Kingston?
No. Yeah, I was a big fan of Eddie Kingston in CZW, in you know, even in PWG, when he was with Ring of Honor for a little bit too. Chikara, a long time before that. I never thought that they were underutilizing him when he was just sort of the third man in DCC. And what sparked this, ironically, was PW Torch's Sean Radican on Twitter, I think it was over the weekend, brought up the point that, you know, how GFW isn't using Kingston more with the type of promos he can cut is just mind-boggling. And I thought about it all weekend. When we picked this category, it was the first thing that came to my mind. He can cut a killer promo, like an amazing killer promo. And I'm not sure he spoke more than once the entire time he was with DCC. And then ever since DCC disbanded back in April or May, he hasn't been seen from at all. So he's not, you know, he's an interesting guy because he's not a guy that was going to come in and be this, you know, technical wizard in the ring, but he has such a crazy, he looks like a nutcase. I mean, he just got that crazed look. It's really unique. He can brawl with the best of them. He can cut insane promos. He's a guy that I feel like they should have used more of with DCC, and now should still use more of him, even as a singles guy. Just sort of wasted the opportunity, I guess, from the second they brought him in, because he never really – he came in with the DCC, and then that was – you know, he was just the third guy there. He was behind James Storm. He was behind Bram. He wrestled in some tag team matches, but didn't even really do anything when he was with the company on a regular basis.
That is an excellent pick, as I had not even thought about him in probably 3 months.
Yeah.
I remember a few months ago we were talking, it must have been, I guess, April or March, and he cut a promo on James Storm, I believe, and it was just great.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the type of promo he can cut.
I mean, yeah, he's just so believable. I mean, that's the type of guy they need right now. Yeah. No, that is a great call, because I didn't even think of him. And yeah, I mean, just to get, I probably like DCC more than most people did, but man, I mean, just get him back on TV or put him together with Bram, or just preferably as a singles act, but man, no matter what, just get him back on TV doing something, because he would liven things up a bit.
Yeah. And you know what? Credit to Sean Radican, because I'm not sure without seeing Sean's tweet this weekend that I would have thought of him either. I think he was talking about the live events, because Kingston is from New York. So I think he was talking about the live events, and he was like, how do you not put Kingston on your New York house shows, and then it was followed up with something like, you know, how do you not use Kingston just period for the type of promos he can cut? So, yeah, I mean, it's they definitely have both on the women's side and the men's side. There's, I think we both agree, there's a lot of people there, a lot of untapped talent that they should be utilizing more of.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're doing a good job with some people. It's cool that they are giving shots to new people, low keys, you know, getting a title match. Matt Sydal is getting a big match with Bobby Lashley. So they're giving new people chances, but man, they have just, maybe they forgot about them too and don't even know they have them under some sort of deal.
All right. Anything else you wanna touch on before we wrap up and go to the VIP after show for VIP members?
I don't think so. I, just as usual, I will plug quickly pwpodcast.com. We put up quite a few things today. Recaps of Steve Austin Unleashed, X-Pac, MLW Radio. Yeah, quick quotes. A lot of new stuff went up today. Usually the weekends and kind of Thursday, Friday are the busiest times for when podcasts drop. So check it out. If you don't have time to listen to all the big podcasts out there, spend a few minutes at pwpodcast.com and just read up and get informed on everything that's going on in the world of wrestling podcasts.
You can follow Andrew on Twitter at Andrew Socek. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. And that's it. So we'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. We're going to record a VIP after show right now. So if you're a PWTorch.com VIP member, you can listen to Andrew and I for about 20 or 30 more minutes. We're going to hit on a couple of different topics. We're going to talk about what the hell is WWE doing with Lana. We're going to talk about the fallout and the buildup to Nakamura and Jinder Mahal. Who should they put the Universal title on at SummerSlam? And are there any guys that we've seen on the indie scene that we think WWE, or Global Force for that matter, should take a look at and try to get under contract? So you'll get our VIP after show if you are a VIP member. If you're not a VIP member, you don't just get more of Andrew and I. You get a lot more. A lot of stuff, a ton of things. If you're a PWTorch.com VIP member, I think Wade had the tweet the other day and included it on his Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast on Podcast One. I believe there were over 130 VIP podcasts put up over the last month. So there's, and that doesn't even get into the fact that you also get the weekly PW Torch newsletter and all the exclusive VIP columns. So there's a ton of content that you get if you go VIP, and you'll get to hear more of Andrew and I in just a couple of minutes when we record the VIP after show. So thank you guys again for listening this week to the PW Torch Livecast post-impact show. We'll be back on the VIP after show for VIP members, and for the rest of you guys, we will see you next week right here as soon as Destination X goes off the air. I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about then. So Andrew and I will talk to you next week right here on the PW Torch Livecast.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Wade Keller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. No!